is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin our number two. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Got a great lineup coming up here. Nate Hornig's going to join us here a little bit later on in this hour. Jordan Sherwood talking UFC. And then hour number three, Alana Rizzo's going to join us from D.C. talking Nats. And how about Wes Reynolds for our Rocket Mortgage? We'll get a preview there, what's going to happen in Detroit. But without further ado, hour number two, our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Celtics have been wheeling and dealing. We all know that. But we'll get to some NBA here in 1 second. Did want to mention Chase Burns again right off the top. The kid from Cincinnati, I mentioned off the top of the show, never get a second chance to make a first impression. I know ERA gave up 3 runs in 5 innings, but it's the K's. It's the heat, baby. And he brought it. 8 Ks in his debut. The Reds come back and win an extras 5-4 over the Yankees. So not only does the kid win the battle, but they win the overall war. What do you make of Chase Burns, and what did you see in outing number one in the Natty?
First and foremost, saw poise, a guy that felt like he belonged there in the stuff that complimented it. I think we all, you know, knew the hype. Dave, you only have 13 professional starts to your name. And he goes on and does what he did against one of the better teams in all of baseball this year. That is pretty impressive, not only just from the result standpoint, but now he'll believe himself. It always takes us a time, like, hey, this is a lifelong dream to get to the big leagues. It's a lifelong dream to be able to put on a big league jersey and to be able to compete against the best of the best. But now he's proven it just in an outing, and it is elite swing and miss stuff. He'll learn from the one mistake there to Ben Rice that ended up leaving a ballpark, but that's all part of it. But it's not only just now, Dave, the short-term outlook, if you're the Reds, is pretty outstanding from a starting pitching standpoint. Can I just throw out there, Andrew Abbott should deserve at least some consideration
for
the National League Cy Young, the year that he's put together. Nick Lodolo, the body of work, is just maybe a step or two behind him. Brady Singer, not only overall, but especially the last couple of days, he'll get the ball today for the sweep, has been phenomenal. And you're still waiting to get Green back. Rhett Lauder, hopefully, you know, I know he has the strained forearm, but, you know, for the future of this rotation, now that you have Burns ascended, I mean, they are going to be in a really advantageous spot for the rest of this season and for many years to come.
Yeah, we talked about it too, and I love this angle here. Plus 340 here to make the postseason this year. Again, you want to hop in on the division odds. If you really think the Cubs don't have the staying power, we'll figure out what they do at the trade deadline. 12-1 right now, and I know they're in fourth place in their division, but they're just 2 games behind Milwaukee and St. Louis. And that division is getting more bunched. And I think you just made the case, and I would second it. I think I take, once Hunter Green is back, I take this rotation over anybody else's. We're talking about Mizorowski here, how great he's been. We all know Paul Skenes obviously is elite there in Pittsburgh, not a whole lot of help there around him. But wouldn't you look at this rotation and say, I'll take the Reds starting five over anything else the NL Central's got to offer?
All right, so I wanted to look at the schedule and see what they have upcoming. And right now, Hunter Green could potentially be back on Wednesday for the series finale at Fenway Park, potentially. I'll double-check news on that. But here are your upcoming, and the reason why I'm advocating, if you believe in him, get the number now because it's going to plummet. They are going to finish with the Yankees today, off day tomorrow, 3-game series against the Padres at home. Then you go to Boston for 3, then you go to Philly. And if they come out of this 10 to 14 day stretch headed into the All-Star break with a handful of series wins over those teams, those numbers are plummeting. And so, again, you know me, I feel like in the National League, it is always better to have those pennant odds, especially if you're looking at the Reds, 50-1, I know you have 45-1. Just getting in the tournament allows you opportunities to monetize tickets right from the wild card round. So if you believe in Cincinnati, the time to strike is now.
Yeah, Chase Burns is going to be a part of that future in Cincinnati and looks pretty darn bright after his 8 Ks in 5 innings yesterday. We talked about some of these trades, and we have the NBA draft coming up tonight. Again, Nate Hornick's going to join us in the next segment to talk about the NBA draft tonight and some bettable angles there. The Nets now have 5 first-round picks tonight. This is after a 3-team deal yesterday between the Seas, the Hawks, and the Nets. Kristaps Porzingis, he's going to the ATL, along with Boston's second-round pick tonight. Brooklyn's going to get back Atlanta's first-round pick. That's number 22 overall. And Terrence Mann, and Boston ends up with George Niang and a second-rounder. So, again, the Nets going to have 5 picks tonight. But this is more about the Celtics and kind of revamping things, salary dumps here. Jrue Holiday, they dealt 48 hours ago here to Portland. Jensen, we see what Boston's doing, right? This is pretty clear.
And again, we talked about it yesterday, knowing that you likely don't have Tatum, if not for the entirety of the season, then for most of the regular season. $62 million you're going to be paying him just this year. They have about $600 million locked up between Tatum and Jaylen Brown. This is not a championship-winning starting lineup as it is today, and this is why we have the body of the offseason, the draft tonight. We'll see what transpires here, but I think you and I have been in agreement. We started making the case that not only is the East super wide open, but if your teams like the Cavaliers, the Knicks, we know the Magic have already made a big move getting Bane. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, if not now, when are you going to put this thing together? What do the Bucks now do with Giannis, and where does he go? The Pacers without Halliburton this year, even at 22-1, I mean, you have to believe if they can keep that core intact that they're a viable option just by how they compete. The Atlanta Hawks on the outside looking in, even though they make this move now for Porzingis and having Trae Young there in the backcourt. Can we make the case, Dave? 5, maybe 6 teams legitimately with the way rosters are currently. If you had to pick a winner of the East, you can make an argument for maybe upwards of 5 teams right now.
If we went back in a time capsule to 365 days ago right now, and I told you the top 3 betting options to win the East this year would be Cleveland, the Knicks, and the Magic, you'd say, what planet are you on? Like, no way we could have forecasted the change now. And obviously with injuries to Indiana and Boston and Philadelphia have changed things here. But a year ago this time, we would have been talking about Philadelphia, Boston, maybe even Miami, you know, like with Jimmy Butler still there a year ago. Crazy how things have shifted, certainly in the East. I don't know if this is going to shift anything here with the Wizards and what they did yesterday, but the trades were not done there with Boston. How about the Pelicans? They acquired Jordan Poole, Sadiq Bey, and the 40th overall pick tonight from the Wizards for CJ McCollum and Kelly Olynyk. So basically swapping some 20-point scores from a year ago. New Orleans getting younger there with Poole. Wizards getting a little bit older, an expiring contract with CJ McCollum. Boy, remember it wasn't that long ago when it was Dollar Dame and CJ there in Portland. It felt like maybe the best backcourt this side of the Splash Brothers. And now, I hate to say it, but McCollum, you're just getting him for a 1 year and then expiring contract. I don't know where he's going to end up, but it feels like McCollum, I don't know how long he's going to be in D.C., Jensen. But again, we kind of see why these moves are made, and a lot of times they're more about money rather than roster construction.
The new CBA is going to dictate that. No longer super teams viable, at least from what the economics will tell you. Can I interest you in a backcourt of DeJounte Murray and Jordan Poole with a flip a coin of Zion Williamson will be available every night? Trey Murphy III. Yikes. 130-1, I think, is what I saw.
Wow.
For the Pelicans to win the West. So, again, if you like burning money, go right ahead.
You know, you go back to that draft with Zion and Ja, 1 and 2. And again, the draft's tonight. So then I think it was just you were so optimistic that these franchises have been changed forever. And, you know, Ja looked the part for a while, some off the court stuff, kind of sidetracked where he's going to go. And again, Zion, whether it's weight, whether it's injury, that's really, it's not looking the way it looked not that long ago. So again, those tentacles for tonight, where you look at some of these teams and go, hey, this all looks great tonight. You got to see how it's going to play out in the long term. It's not working out very well there in New Orleans and maybe not in Memphis as well. You can take your betting to the next level with our friends over at FirstBet. You sign up now at FirstBet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VEASAN200. Score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Do not miss out. Start betting smarter today at FirstBet.com. NFL.com. Jensen, will you get involved with the draft tonight? Because I've been listening to some of our other shows here in the network, and I feel like some people believe that there's not really good betting opportunities there. You really got to search. And again, our next guest is going to help us do that in the next segment with Nate Hornig. But it feels difficult to try to figure out what these teams are going to do and if they're already set. And obviously we know Cooper Flagg's going to go number one. It already feels like the draft, I don't want to say it's predetermined, but it does feel like the GMs, the head coaches, know where they want to go early in this draft.
I guess the only intrigue now that we have what transpired the last couple of days, Dave, is what will Brooklyn do with all these first round selections?
Yep.
Ultimately, I think we've seen some steam on Konkanipal going fourth overall there to Charlotte. I think we were pretty sure that Dylan Harper is going to go there at two. And really the tentacles after this, we have seen plenty of times on draft night, these opportunities for other teams that have these star players already in tow. Like, does it become a meaningful swap in spots? I know a lot was made of, hey, is San Antonio going to offer number two and try and go get Giannis, from Milwaukee? So we'll see. Uninterested for most of it, but we'll certainly pay attention to it to see if there's any drama as well.
The point about Konkanipal there coming out of Duke, he's -1,000 right now to be drafted in the top five. So again, some of these markets out there at DraftKings, right? Yeah, I think it's telling us where we think these guys are going to go. We'll talk more about that and what's going to happen tonight in that NBA draft. Nate Hornig is going to join us next here, VSiN by the Books. Continue VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on this Wednesday. NBA draft is tonight. And great to be joined by Nate Hornig here. He's a betting news senior writer and analyst. Give a follow on X at @Shaggy_bets. Joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Nate, we appreciate you getting up with us early here on this Wednesday to talk some NBA draft tonight. And again, look, we all get fired up for the NFL draft. We get it. People love to bet that now. I know the books hate it here in Las Vegas. That's for sure. I wonder if they're going to hate it tonight, too, because it feels like the books are a little bit nervy that, like, man, there's not a lot of betting angles here, but they don't want to get burned. It feels like Cooper Flagg is going to be the overall number one pick. First of all, let's just start there. When you're looking at a massive number of Cooper Flagg to go number one, could there be anything that we're missing, or is this, in fact, a slam dunk, pun intended, done deal?
This is what's happening. Cooper Flagg is going number one overall to the Dallas Mavericks. Right there, you see it, -20,000. There's no point in looking elsewhere, in my opinion. You can't pass up on a guy with this talent, with this potential. He's a unicorn. He's a generational talent. We know this, so you've got to take him number one overall.
Nate, I guess the proverbial draft then starts at three. We would all assume that Dylan Harper goes number two overall to the San Antonio Spurs. Let me ask it this way. I feel like we get more intrigue in the NBA just because of the lesser amount of rounds, but also now with the way the dynamics are around the league, tectonic plates shifting in the East. When do you anticipate maybe that first trade happening here potentially tonight and maybe the teams or players that you can envision being involved?
I would think we'd maybe see something towards the end of the lottery. I know we kind of talked about the Spurs maybe offering that number two pick to go get a guy like Giannis. I think they stick with Dylan Harper. He's pretty much the favorite to go number two. In my mind, the Spurs got to take him number two, but they're sitting with another pick as well. That one could potentially move in my eyes. Giannis, he might be a little bit out of the question, but the Spurs could look to move that second lottery pick, get themselves another superstar to pair with Wembanyama.
So if you're looking at Harper going to San Antonio and pairing him with Wemby, they right now are 16-1 to win the West next year. I know it's a heck of a jump in a really crowded Western Conference. Will you be looking to make kind of correlated plays based on what you actually see tonight? Or would you make them before with the anticipation that this is what's going to happen and now I'm going to get the better number and after it's set in stone, maybe these numbers come down?
I, you know, we try to not have FOMO in this betting game, obviously.
Right.
You might miss out on a number, and that's okay. And that's kind of how I'm playing this draft. I want to see the things happen. I want to see the pieces move before I'm hopping in for a number. Because maybe I expect Giannis to go somewhere, and he ends up on the other side of the country. I don't want to get burned sitting with, yeah, maybe I've got a better number, but something's just not going to happen anymore. So, me personally, I'm going to wait, sit, let the pieces fall, and then dig into the futures from there.
All right, Nate, could have some exactas here. A couple of great markets if you want to get into some potential picks here. Let's start at number five. Let's assume that the Jazz are going to pick there. I know a lot of projections have Ace Bailey there, Konkanipal at four there to Charlotte. If you could give us some thoughts on your exactas at five for the Jazz, and then potentially at six if the Wizards are still picking there, who do you like and why?
Mm-hmm. So number five, I think it's got to be Trey Johnson. I love that plus 245 number as well. He's not the favorite, clearly, but I think he's the best scorer in this draft, especially after Cooper Flagg. Trey Johnson was looked at to be the number three pick and maybe even the number four earlier. Obviously, he slipped down with Vijay Edgecombe moving up into that spot. But at number five, I think you've got to take the best scorer in the game. The Jazz, they've already got Isaiah Collier. They've already got Colin Sexton. So you don't necessarily need a point guard like Jeremiah Fears there. But you've got to get Trey Johnson. You've got to have scoring on your team. And I think he's the best option. 20 points per game at Texas in a crowded SEC. I think this guy's ready for the next level.
I'm talking with Nate Hornick here, NBA draft tonight. Give him a follow on X at @Shaggy_bets. And Nate, we're talking a little bit about the Nets in that they've got they've stockpiled some picks here for four first round picks potentially tonight if they don't trade those away. I'm not saying that this is going to be what Sam Presti did at OKC, but we did see that Sam kind of stockpiled a lot of picks. He's done that, and that's how they build their championship success. Could that start tonight? I don't want to give them too much hope here at 150-1 extreme long shots here to win the East. But could it start tonight for Brooklyn with these amount of picks that they have? And what does that look like in your eyes to actually give that franchise some hope tonight?
Yeah, I mean, the Nets, they've got a long way to go to compete in the East. But you said it, they've got multiple draft picks tonight. This draft is filled with a lot of talented players. I know we're focused on the Cooper Flagg and the Dylan Harper up top, but the meat in the middle of this draft, there's going to be a lot of very good role players playing in the NBA for a long time. Does it start tonight? Yes, I think it could, depending on who they take. I'm seeing them sitting at the number eight pick right now. Whether they get aggressive and try and move up to go get their guy, I'm not sure. But with that number of picks in the draft, you'd think they'd be able to build a young core to go forward for the future.
All right. And Nate, always like a little surprise on draft night. And usually in the NFL draft, we get a few of those. We certainly did this year with the Jags trading up to get Travis Hunter. Is there a player in potential team, not necessarily a meteoric rise, but maybe one that if you are looking for a pizza money bet, maybe somebody that's going to rocket up here the board and maybe go to a team much higher than some of these prognostications?
I would say my mind is going for Derek Queen, center from Maryland. Obviously, we all know him hitting that game-winning buzzer beater against Colorado State in the NCAA tournament, but this guy's a big, young body, and he's got fantastic footwork. You don't see that a lot with these bigger guys, as sometimes they're a little slower. Maybe it takes them a little bit to get to the NBA speed that's needed at that next level. Derek Queen's got it. He's young. He's ready to go. And like I said, fantastic footwork, good on both sides of the ball, can be that prolific scorer if you need him to. I think someone might take a stab at Derek Queen. I know he's projected about the 11th, 12th pick right now. I could see him maybe going more like six or seven if someone decides he's their best fit for their roster.
In Colorado State, that's a travel. Maryland, it's a gather, right? It's a gather and an extra step. That's the way we do these things.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about Sam Presti to the Victor Go the Spoils now as the reigning defendings. What do you think they do? Because again, you know, some people are going to say, man, they don't have to make any roster changes here when you're the champs and you got these guys under contract. What do you think they do in this draft, if anything at all?
I mean, 68 wins, coming off a national championship. You said it. You don't really need to do anything. You got SGA, who's only 26. Chet Holmgren's 23. Jalen Williams, who's good enough to be that 1A guy, is 24. You've got your young core built, and now you're probably just sitting by the phone. You've got tons of first-round draft picks over the next few years. Sit and wait. See what someone might offer you. Like you said, you don't need to make any moves. The ball is in the Thunder's court here, and so I could see them having a boring draft, per se, just waiting by the phone, seeing if someone wants to make an offer for some of those first-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot to do for them. And Dave and I talked earlier this week, Nate, it is still mind-boggling to see them sub 3-1 already to win the title next year. Mm-hmm. A team that in every sense of the word has rocketed up the odds boards, that would be Houston with the acquisition of Kevin Durant. Biggest name for you potentially move tonight in the draft. Established NBA player, biggest name that you think could potentially be moved and why?
I think it's got to be Giannis. I know that seems chalky, but he's the biggest name in this free agency of this offseason, clearly. I think he's run his course in Milwaukee. You know, they obviously got the championship. Chris Middleton's now moved on to other teams. It's time for the Bucks to regroup, revamp, and I think that starts with shipping Giannis off. Where he goes, that I don't know. I really don't have any sort of prediction, but I think we're definitely going to see at least one, maybe two big names move tonight before the end of the first round, and I'll be looking to see where Giannis ends up.
All right, Nate, we'll get you out on this one. Obviously, when you're Dallas and you got Cooper Flagg, number one overall, we know how important that is and how big a night that is for the franchise. That aside, in this first round, which team to you is the most important one to get it right tonight? Which team's got the most riding post Cooper Flagg?
I think the Washington Wizards, because you just need to improve. Plain and simple, you can't put it easier than that. You need to improve on all sides of the basketball. And yes, they've got kind of a veteran core, you could say, with Chris Middleton, Marcus Smart, just acquired CJ McCollum. But you've got to build for the future. Those three guys are great mentors for a young core over the next few years, but those three guys are not going to help you win a championship. You're going to need to elevate to the next level with those young guys that you pick tonight. Use those veteran leaders, give them the experience, give them the mentorship they need to get to that next level. But for the Wizards, they've got to make some strong moves in the draft tonight, in my mind.
Boy, Nate, music to my ears back in my D.C. days covering that team when Gilbert Arenas, Antoine Jameson, they're going to be the number one seed. And then don't get on the plane ride back from Phoenix. It all went south from there. Nate, really appreciate you joining the program today. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Nate Hornick, great insight there. Give him a follow on X at Shaggy_Betts.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Enjoyed that conversation with Nate Hornick in the last segment talking NBA draft. I found it interesting that he felt like the Wizards really were the team tonight in that first round with the most to potentially gain. Like, it was not that Cooper Flagg going number one overall, Jensen, we get it. That's going to be where all the eyes go. But really, it is kind of those teams that we're not thinking about on the public consciousness that probably have the most to gain past Dallas tonight, right? Do you see it that same way?
Yeah, and I think overall, too, that this is where, with what has transpired already with a couple of big names going and Desmond Bane and Kevin Durant, teams that are acquiring guys to go for it. I agree wholeheartedly. I think Giannis now becomes that biggest domino of how other teams then react. Wherever he goes ends up forcing some clarity one way or another. And imagine if Giannis is dealt somewhere in the East. I think that's the one. If I'm going to watch tonight whatsoever to hope that something like that is going to happen, that's, I guess I do want to see chaos. I would love to see that.
Yeah, Nate does believe that, like we're talking about, he's going to get dealt tonight. That's the belief. And again, so this could turn into the Cooper Flagg / Giannis draft, ironically, is what tonight could be about. So that'll be fascinating. By the way, check out our friends over at Sharp Plays. If you haven't done so already, you can get unmatched transparency, records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, alerts directly from the pros themselves. So again, sharpplays.com, trusted by the pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. Let's get back to Major League Baseball here, Jensen, and it is Wednesday, which means it's time for this edition of Whiff Wednesday, and I love what you've got on the docket today. I didn't think we'd be talking about the Brewers and the Pirates in a game in June, but this one has got, boy, highlights and headlines for tomorrow written all over it.
Yeah, no matter what, we'll be talking about it tomorrow, and hopefully for good reason. I put up there Alien versus Predator, and I don't really think there's a bad comp if you want to make Paul Skeens Alien, Jacob Mazurowski Predator, if you want to flip-flop them.
Mm-hmm.
They're both superhuman freaks on the mound. And so here's some statistics. So Paul Skeens, every road start he's had, Dave, he's had eight of them. He's allowed two runs or fewer. Okay. Jacob Mazurowski, for people that are just getting up to speed on him, he has given up one hit in two major league starts. Let me say it again. One hit in two major league starts spanning 11 innings. So they get to go head to head today. This will be the featured afternoon game. No question about it. Let's go. Paul Skeens under 1.5 earned runs allowed. That's $1.20 right now on DraftKings. And then we will also go with Jacob Mazurowski under 3.5 hits allowed at minus $1.10. So I am going to bank on both these offenses being limited by two of the young phenoms in the National League. And oh, by the way, esteemed producer Brandon Valesky, a great, great post on X yesterday. For the foreseeable future, we have Paul Skeens, we have Jacob Mazurowski, and we have Chase Burns, all in the National League Central. Hang with them, rest of the division, for the next 5 to 6 years.
This total is sitting at 7. Does that feel high to you? Look, Skeens might go, we don't know. I would assume Skeens going to go 7, 8, 9, potentially in that range. I don't know if they'll let Mazurowski go that long, Jensen. But, like, first 5 under, do we feel like we've got to play that?
Can I? Okay, how many total runs do you think are scored, period? Just give me an idea.
I would lean to the under, which is, by the way, minus $1.22 at 7. But I'd be looking at 4. 4 runs is what I'm looking at.
Like total under 4 is plus +350 right now.
That intrigue. I can see a 2-1 final, big right? time. I could see that type of game playing out tonight. Just don't go to the pen, anybody. Let these kids eat. Right. That's what we'd want for sure. What have you got today with Gore against Kikuchi? And you have a very clever title for this.
Mac Daddy, you say. All right. So the dad jokes are just really, really bad.
Fantastic. I love them.
Okay. So Yusei Kikuchi is going to get a nice little situational spot. So 7-day game starts, Dave, that he's had this year. .131 ERA, second lowest day game ERA amongst qualified starters. He gets the Boston Red Sox today. Mackenzie Gore, also a day game start in San Diego. He leads all National League pitchers in day game strikeouts with 59. So we'll go Kikuchi under earned runs allowed at 2.5. That's minus $1.40.
Mm.
And then we'll take a little shot here on Mackenzie Gore. His over for the strikeouts is 5.5. So 6 or more strikeouts plus $1.10. The strikeout numbers have come down just a little bit in his last handful of starts, but potentially we'll just ride the trend today and see if it pays off for us.
You know, I think I like to always put that GM hat on here at this time of year in baseball as we talk about the second half. Kikuchi feels like a piece, doesn't he? Now, again, Gore is a guy in D.C. that I think they're going to framework the rotation around. That's why when they made the Juan Soto deal, he was one of those guys that came over from San Diego back in that trade. Does Kikuchi feel like a movable piece if you're Anaheim? Or do you say, no, like Gore in D.C., he's a guy we might want to build around the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, you go and sign him for the contract that you did. I don't think Perry Manassian looking to move him.
Okay.
If you are kind of falling off. And remember, Angels just a game under 500. They're right in the thick of things here, and I think they're going to try and keep this thing together this year. Kikuchi has been great. Jose Soriano has probably been their best starter overall, but those top two, I think that's kind of what they envisioned. They needed continuity at some point here out there in Anaheim. So I would assume that both those guys are untouchable. But crazier things have happened here. But you don't give out that kind of multi-year contract, Dave, unless you're trying to have him be a viable party rotation for the next couple of years.
I know that this year has made JVT happy. That makes me happy. That his Angels are respectable, and Kikuchi a big reason why. You know, Met fans, we're still upset that Zach Wheeler is not pitching in Queens these days. But look, Philadelphia, he's been all that's been advertised. And I think the Yankees are pretty happy with their new ace. But do you see some trouble today for Max?
Okay, so my thought was summer breeze or overheated. And I do think we find Zach Wheeler to continue being that summer breeze. And so looked at his last handful of road starts, four straight road starts, Dave, where he's had eight or more strikeouts. Conversely here, Max Fried, if there's a team in the National League throughout his career that's given him a bit of trouble, it has been the Reds. And a 4.58 career ERA, three games started against Cincinnati. I went more conservatively for Zach Wheeler. Seven or more strikeouts is actually minus $1.05 going up against the Astros. And then Max Fried, we took a shot on some plus money here. Under 5.5 punch outs for him is plus $1.15 on DraftKings. So let's say that Cincinnati kind of continues really making life miserable here for the Yankees. And potentially if we get Max Fried out early in this one, maybe it is under that total. So a little bit of a shot here. But we'll lean on where Cincinnati has been really, really tough here as of late and maybe continues with a potential sweep opportunity there at Great American Ballpark.
You know, we had an old-fashioned pitching matchup yesterday, and I had Donnybrook there between H-Town and Philadelphia. 1-0 final there. Valdez and Suarez were really good for their respective squads here. 7 2/3 for Ranger, even though he gets the loss. Framber went 7 scoreless. Do you still love a good old-fashioned pitching gem like we saw head-to-head yesterday between Philadelphia and Houston? Because they're rare.
Is water wet, my friend? You're talking to a pitcher.
I mean, you don't see 1-0 in 2025 very often.
Buddy, there was nothing better than a getaway day between Mark Burley of the White Sox, Jake Westbrook of our Cleveland Indians.
Yes.
We were making reservations at steakhouses for when we got in. It was 2 hours, 10 minutes, book it, get on the bird, enjoy a cocktail, get ready for a little filet. Absolutely love those quick ones.
See,
no
kids,
question.
Pitching and defense can be fun too. We still appreciate it. I hope everybody else did yesterday there in H-Town. All right, there's a new sports betting market in town. It's called XCUTTA. It's spelled X-C-U-T-T-A. XCUTTA is a sports Calcutta combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. So you can create your own XCUTTA auctions for you and your crew for any sport or any sporting event. Football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, Super Bowl, World Series, March Madness, Wimbledon, even your own local golf tournament. How about that? Create your own private or public auctions. Create secondary markets for aftermarket buying and selling. Over 1,000 teams, players, and drivers in the database with the ability for you to add even more. Free practice auctions are now running daily at 3, 6, 9 p.m. at xcutta.com to check it out if you haven't done so already. And for a free 3-month bidding subscription, email support at xcutta.com. Mention VSiN, xcutta.com, the future of futures wagering. Pretty interesting stuff right there. All right, when we come back, we're going to go back to the great city of Chicago, catch up with our buddy Jordan Sherwood, UFC 317. Jensen, behind me on the big board when I walked in this morning, the main event, Charles Oliveira, you can now get him at 4-1. The numbers are going higher. They're going the other way. We'll discuss if that's the right way to go with Jordan when you come back with us right here on VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Wednesday edition. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. And yesterday, we had on a bit of Chicago royalty in Ricardo Lamas. Yeah. We have more Chicago royalty joining the program today in the form of the one and only Jordan Sherwood. Give him a follow on X as I do at Wood on ESPN 1000. Does a great job there in the Second City. Not only talking Bears football, but breaking down UFC and MMA and the like. Jensen, it is a pleasure to have Jordan join the program. Jordan, when I look at this line, I mentioned to Jensen, behind me here at Circa, I walk in this morning and the number on Taporia in the main event Saturday night here in Vegas, it just goes up, 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 up. He's over a $5 betting favorite here, so you can come back on Charles at 4-1. How do you break down this with Taporia moving up in weight class to take on the former champion at 155?
I think it speaks to just how great of a fighter Ilia Taporia currently is and how great of a fighter people expect him to be no matter the weight class. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's obviously he's undefeated and he's coming off of back-to-back stoppages of arguably two of the greatest featherweights of all time. And most importantly, stopping a guy in Max Holloway who's never been stopped. So the expectations are that a guy that clearly struggled, Taporia did, to get to 145, he's going to benefit greatly from not having to cut that extra 10 pounds because his skill set is still going to resonate at 155. And what we know about Charles Oliveira, and you know, I'm up there with one of the biggest fans of him and how he revitalized his career, set UFC records, became the champion, and is just such a likable personality outside the cage. But when you look at it from stylistic matchup and what you know happens in every Charles Oliveira fight is that he needs to get knocked down before he gets going. And I look at that and I'm like, that's a difficult proposition to think is going to happen against a guy with the power and the finishing ability of Ilia Taporia.
Yeah, Jordan, and that's kind of where I went to when I was talking with Dave throughout the week, is that you look at the superior boxing and power ability of Taporia, and you know, if it's a stand-up fight, he's got a chance to just knock him out right away. I believe you've got a little prop here on this one, because when Dave and I saw the total come out, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, came out at 1.5.
That's
like,
right.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
All right, this is a pretty clear line of demarcation. If you feel it's Taporia, this is an early fight. And if Oliveira gets, you know, a little bit more into this fight, then perhaps he's got a chance to be able to upset him. Is that how you handicap it as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I you can't play Ilia Taporia in any way, shape, or form at $5, you know, even in like in a parlay. So what I think is the most likely outcome is Taporia via knockout. That last check, I looked at it last night when I was texting with you about the plays, is $1.70, which is great. I think that's a great value because, look, we've seen Charles Oliveira stopped before, and as I alluded to, we've seen him get knocked down in every fight that he's come back, like the Chandler fight, the Poirier fight, the Gaethje fight. He just comes back. Don't know if that can happen, but if you even want to add a little bit further, I think Alexander Pantoja has got Kai Kara-France worked in every way, shape, or form. I think Pantoja is a special champion at flyweight. I think Kai Kara-France is a tough customer, but we know what he brings. So if you couple just Pantoja, get that line down, as you see there on the screen, $2.58, you're at plus money if you couple that with Taporia to win via knockout. And I think that's a healthy way to play the main and co-main event heading in for Saturday night.
Objection, Your Honor. You guys go, we have to put some respect in the name of DuBronx Charles Oliveira here. And let me play devil's advocate. We know Armin Sarukian is the backup fighter here for this lightweight title. And I know that Chucky Olives lost to Armin Sarukian last time out, which is interesting that Sarukian can't get the title shot here, but Charles gets this vacated title now that Makhachev has exited the division. Does it have to be by knockout for Taporia? Because, look, the way Ilia laid it out would scare me a little bit if I was Oliveira. Because he said, Charles comes right to you, so I don't have to do anything. I had to run down Max Holloway. I had to run down Volkanovski. I had to be the forward pressure fighter. Charles is going to walk right to me. If the fight hits the ground, Jordan, could you see? You know how dangerous Charles Oliveira can be on the ground. Is that the only way that DuBronx gets his old crown back? Is that the fight hits the ground and he locks up some sort of submission to get Taporia out of there?
Well, I think obviously we know the finishing ability of Charles Oliveira once it gets to the ground. I think there's a likelihood. And then maybe you look at the Jai Herbert fight.
Yes.
Because that was at lightweight for Ilia Topuria. He got knocked down in that fight with a head kick. He also got knocked down before he got to the UFC via a head kick as well. And the body type is kind of similar, Herbert and Oliveira. But the difference is that, like, Oliveira is never, like, really looking and hunting for takedowns to get the fight to the ground. He has to be, like, kind of, like, forced to the ground.
Yes.
Again, being knocked down by his opponent, which is why I think I would handicap a potential Sarukian fight a lot different, because Sarukian wouldn't be messing around at all. He'd be hunting takedown for takedown.
Yep.
I do think you have to question Topuria's ability to go five rounds. We know Charles Oliveira likely can Ilia Topuria. Not sure, but again, I think we know what we get about Charles Oliveira. We know that he's susceptible to the knockout. I think Topuria is a special talent, which is why the line reflects the odds that they currently stand.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Jordan. Okay, rest of the main card here. Any other spots you'd like to target? I think you might have a little dog play in another one of these flyweight bouts as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the flyweight short notice fight. I mean, I also think Joshua Van is a special talent. I think he reminds me a little bit of a younger Max Holloway with his fluidity, his movement, his just ferocity to go after you and take one, give two. But I think it's a little bit too much too soon for a guy, his opposition in Brandon Royval, a multiple-time title challenger, a guy that we identified early on that he's going to be a special talent when he got. And he's kind of like Joshua Van before getting the UFC, going after you, reckless, scrambling ability, good submissions. He's now kind of become a little bit reserved and understands, right, here's the next level of my evolution if I'm going to be a champion. So I think because it's short notice, because Van is dramatically stepping up in competition, I'm a little bit surprised at the short notice nature that Royval is at plus money. Maybe it's because Royval kind of throws out the game plan once he gets into the fight, but I still need Joshua Van to prove to me that he's worthy of fighting guys in the top five in the flyweight division. So I think at plus money, I'll take the Raw Dog because he's a guy that's defeated champions and was competitive in championship fights.
It's my favorite fight that's not in the co-main or the main event is the Raw Dog there at plus money against Joshua Van. I'm right there with you, Jordan. Love that handicap. The only concern is how wild he does get, and he does get wild in there if Joshua Van can take advantage of that. But I'm with you. I think that at plus money for Royval, really good price point there. I'm very curious to get your handicap on the Joker. Jack Hermanson is back in there against RoboCop. Are you fading Gregory Rodriguez?
Well, look, I mean, I don't want to fade Gregory Rodriguez. He's always been a favorite play of mine because obviously he's got knockout power. The guy is also, I think, very special on the feet. And if he gets to the ground, he's well-versed and can go there. It's just he came up pretty flat in his last time out in the main event against Jared Cannonier. That worries me. And a guy, if Jack Hermanson's healthy, and like we don't know where Jack Hermanson's been. He's been out of the spotlight now for what 16 months. But prior to that, he looked pretty good in his last fight against a big-time prospect. And what we know about Jack Hermanson, if he's the same type of fighter, he's got solid movement, good boxing. If it gets to the ground, he's got a nasty guillotine, and he's very heavy on the top. So I think over a three-round fight, he can potentially outbox and just, avoid the knockout power that Gregory Rodriguez possesses. So until Jack Hermanson proves to me that he's not a top 10 middleweight, and I only think he's not in the top 10 because he hasn't been active. He's been out. He shouldn't be as big of a dog as he is. I think this is more of a pick'em fight. So I'm surprised by the line. I'll grab Jack Hermanson and have to be proven that he's not the same fighter that he was, 15, 16 months ago.
All right, only about 45 seconds to go. I got to ask you about a Chicago fighter on the card, Terrence McKinney. Do you want to lay with T-Mac $1.85 against Slava Claus here in Borshev? Because we know that Terrence, if he doesn't get you out of there early, sometimes it gets a little bit dicey late.
Yeah, that's a really big price for a guy that I don't think is going to overwhelm Slava Claus.
Right.
I think Slava Claus is prepared for stuff, on the feet and can get nasty, along with him. One recommendation was thrown out to me was McKinney via sub,
ooh,
which is plus money. So maybe a little bit of a club and sub type deal. But right now, as it stands, straight pick. I would actually lean towards Slava Claus. I like him being at American Top Team, the training he gets there, his ability maybe to get the fight to the ground if he needs to, and avoid that first round that McKinney has.
I see it the same way, by the way, on the Slava Claus side. Jordan, always appreciate your time. Get ready for Bears camp. I'm sure they're ready there in Chicago, right?
We are ready to go, you know, undefeated, go to a Super Bowl. Cam Williams is the next big thing, of course.
Going to the Super Bowl every offseason they are. Jordan Sherwood, the best. We're back with more in a moment.